novonordisk-us.com.
And welcome to Thursday's Topical Currents. I'm Bonnie Berman. Joseph Cooper returns on Monday. Well, if birthdays and anniversaries are two of our favorite dates, how would we classify April 15th, sort of the one we most dread? Well, for better or for worse, it's this Tuesday. We're at your service today with Keith Hall. He's a certified public accountant and tax consultant. He's president and CEO of the National Association for the Self-Employed, that's NASE. And we'll take your questions about changes and adjustments or whatever else to the 2013 tax code. Our number is 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-9576. Email is radio@wlrn.org. And just one note, we're not giving any specific legal advice today, just general information. So welcome, Keith Hall. Thanks for joining us. Hello?
Hello, are you there?
Oh, yeah, I'm here. Are you there?
I am here, just waiting for some good tax talk.
Okay, good tax talk. Is there good tax talk?
Well, hopefully there's always good tax talk. It's one of those things we all have in common, whether we like it or not. It's this time of year, and we all have to face it.
Well, it looks like this major change to the 2013 filing, a new home office standard deduction is available. How does that work exactly?
Well, that's great news for small business owners. I think historically, you know, about half of all the self-employed people in this country operate out of their home. There's always been a deduction available for that, but it's been very complicated. There's a one-page form. Believe it or not, on that one-page form, the words "see instructions" appear 17 times on that one-page form. They've given us this year and brand new a standard deduction, which basically means instead of going through that giant calculation, all you have to do, add up the square footage of that back bedroom, the one that you use for the home office, multiply that by $5, and that's the deduction. Piece of cake.
Oh, so that's it.
That's very easy. Now, you still have to have the main requirements, which is the space must be used regularly for business and exclusively for business. So you can't have the kids play games in there. You can't have the baby crib. It needs to be space that is set aside just for business,
but
no longer have to do utility calculation, depreciation recapture, all those complicated IRS things. Now you can just do a simple deduction at $5 per square foot and save a few tax dollars.
Oh, that's great. But when you say it can't be used for anything else, I mean, they're not going to come out and check that, are they?
Well, you know, I don't want to tell you how long I've been doing this because then you'll know how old I am.
Okay.
But I never have seen a situation that the IRS actually comes to the house and measures the square footage. So I can't imagine that scenario happening. Of course, we want it to be right.
Correct.
We want that space to be used for business, not only for IRS rules, but it certainly will make you more productive in that home office as well. But again, it doesn't even have to be the entire bedroom. If you can't allocate the entire space, you can use part of the room. You know, move the kids' toys over to one side of the room and use the other side of the room as that home office. But it is certainly worth rearranging that one room, rearranging some furniture, having the kids play in the other bedroom, because the substantial benefit of claiming that deduction can be as much as $500, $750 in cash in lower tax payments. So it's definitely worth looking into.
Absolutely. Well, what are some other changes and adjustments to filing in 2013?
Well, it seems like the IRS always has to change some things, and I guess that's normal. Things change as CPI changes, amounts move up. A couple of things to keep in mind that are very common to most small business owners are the business use of your automobile. The IRS gives us a standard mileage rate, which is just a pennies per mile that you can keep track of your business miles, multiply by that rate, and that gives you the deduction for that business use of your automobile. That new rate for 2013 is 56.5 cents per mile, and that can add up very fast, particularly for direct selling type small business owners, those who have clients outside the home. You drive in that car to the post office, to the office supply store, to visit your clients. Those miles can really add up, and that deduction can be very substantial. It's also a deduction that a lot of small business owners miss because it doesn't show up in their business checkbook. When they get ready to add up all the receipts, they look at their bank statement, they look at their QuickBooks. The expenses they incurred to operate their business don't include the business use of that car. So that's one that changed this year. It just went up. The deduction is basically the same, but that is very important because a lot of small business owners tend to miss that one. So make sure you take advantage of the business use of that car.
What are some other commonly forgotten deductions for just generally, I mean, including small businesses, but just for individuals?
Well, it's a great point, and it seems like some of the deductions that are most often missed are like that automobile deduction, those that don't really show up in your business checkbook. Another one, even for individuals, is that home office deduction that we talked about.
Right.
If you're not aware that that space that you operate out of your home, and you probably do anyway, if you're not aware that that's a potential deduction, that's another easy one to miss.
Okay.
The one that I like for all people to consider, and this is really the last best way to save tax dollars, is to make sure you consider some type of retirement plan contribution. Almost all of us are eligible to make an IRA contribution. That limit went up this year as well. Most of us can now make up to a $5,500 tax-deductible contribution to a traditional IRA. If you're over age 50, you can actually do an extra $1,000, so $6,500. Small business owners have that opportunity, but then even another opportunity called a Simplified Employee Pension Plan, or SEP plan, whereby you can contribute up to 20% of the net earnings from your business into an SEP / IRA plan, and that contribution is deductible on last year's tax return. So it's a great way to invest in your own future, but it will also reduce that amount of money that you otherwise would have to send to the IRS. Very powerful, and nobody is going to call you and remind you to invest in your own future. You know, you don't get a bill from Charles Schwab or Merrill Lynch reminding you to make that retirement plan contribution. So if you don't write it on your calendar, put it in your to-do list, that is one thing that's very easy to miss, and you're leaving money on the table.
I want to ask about some deductions also that I found when I was researching for the show, but when do we know whether we should contribute to, how do we know when we should contribute to either a Roth or an IRA? What's the difference?
Well, that's a great question, and we could probably do an entire hour just on that very concept. The easiest way to think about it is a Roth IRA provides you the longest term benefit for the earnings on the account to be tax-free. So you put money into a Roth IRA, and for as long as that money grows, all of the earnings included within that account are going to be tax-free. But you do not get a current tax deduction for the money you put into a Roth IRA.
Okay.
The money that you put into a traditional IRA, you get an immediate tax benefit because that contribution is deductible on your current tax return. However, all of the earnings, all of that money that you put in there grows over time. When you take it out after retirement, presumably way down the road, those monies are going to be taxable. So it ends up being kind of a complicated calculation and certainly depends on individual circumstances. But a general rule of thumb is the younger you are, the more likely the Roth IRA contribution might end up being more beneficial, because the growth in that account, the earnings over time, are going to grow greater just because of the period number of years that you're going to extrapolate mm-hmm. that earnings over. The typically older you are, most likely taking that current tax deduction, the benefit for reducing taxes that year, most likely will outweigh that longer-term benefit just because the number of years are shorter. So that's kind of a general rule of thumb. It's certainly worth sitting down with a financial advisor. There's lots of calculators online that can help you with this type of thing. But putting some numbers on a piece of paper, doing some calculations, seeing how your specific situation would differ is really the best advice.
Okay, now, when I was researching for the program, I found a deduction I didn't know about, and I don't know that most people do. You can write off moving your pet across the country or wherever, and just like you can write off your own move, I mean, if you have to relocate.
Well, that's right, and that's something that people don't always think about, and it seems like it's even more applicable today with some of the larger businesses out there, you know, downsizing. People are tend to move more, it seems like, for job opportunities, even for self-employment opportunities, moving to another area that might be more beneficial for your particular industry. It seems like more people these days are doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are relocating your home in anticipation of a new job, even if you don't have the job already lined up, if you're moving for new employment, then the transportation expenses, moving that pet, like you had mentioned, mm-hmm. moving your household belongings, if you're moving across the country and you have to stay in a hotel as you're driving across the country, all of those expenses can be potentially deductible. So if that's your situation, or if you did that in 2013, take some time to go back and look at those receipts. If you used one of the big moving companies or you rented a U-Haul trailer, like I say, you drove across country and stayed in a hotel, go back and take some time, go back to your bank statement, make some copies of those receipts, and when it's time to sit down and do the tax return, whether you use a professional or you use one of the automated software programs, make sure you have those receipts because you can save a few dollars just because of those moving expenses.
And I also saw, and I don't quite understand this, how this works, gambling losses can be deducted. What is that?
Well, that's interesting. Well, hopefully there's not a whole lot of people out there doing a whole lot of gambling.
I hope
that's
not, but...
That's not the best thing to do with your estimated tax money. Go ahead and send that to the IRS and you'll be better off. Gambling losses are deductible, but they're only deductible to the extent of winnings. So, you know, to the extent you go out and have a big slot machine win, for example, some people, you know, when you have a big slot machine win, the casino will actually send you W-2, like a little notice, and they also send to the IRS. So the IRS is going to know that you won that $1,200 or $1,600 on that slot machine. If you don't include some of the losses that you had, then you're going to pay tax on that $1,600. Although most of us, and again, I don't mean to be cynical for the casinos, but most of us don't usually leave the casino with more money than we went into the casino with.
No, they wouldn't be in business.
That's exactly right. So most people who end up with one of those little tax forms from the casino indicating that they won one of those jackpots, make sure you have some other documentation of other money that you actually lost in the gambling activity.
How do you
you can offset the income?
How do you document that?
Well, you know, usually you'll have most people, and again, I'm not a great a big gambler, but you have a player's card in most of the local casinos. They'll record the time that you spent at a particular slot machine or gaming token.
I see.
If you play, you know, some other things, you'll have a report of those. You can kind of keep a log, not so much different than you do for the business miles on an automobile. But there's kind of extemporaneous evidence that you were there, that you kept notes, that you have that player's card report. So the IRS kind of looks at it as an overall reasonableness calculation. And I think if you just kind of document on your calendar the days you went, you've got some receipts for other type of things. There may be restaurants in the casino that you ate at.
I see.
Of those type of things will be kind of the overall evidence that you actually spent time in the casino.
We're speaking with Keith Hall. He's a CPA and president and CEO of the National Association for the Self-Employed. And topical currents, we need to take a short break, and we'll come back and take some emails and your calls, 1-800-743-9576.
The cardiologists at University of Miami Health System are committed to being the choice for your heart. With advanced clinical research, the physicians at UHealth are correcting complex heart rhythm disorders, utilizing the latest cardiac catheterization technology, working to prevent sudden cardiac death, and replacing damaged aortic valves without traditional open heart surgery. University of Miami Health System is online at uhealthcardiology.com.
The mission of the Children's Services Council of Broward is to empower children to become responsible, productive adults, capable of realizing their full potential, hopes, and dreams. Information at cscbroward.org. Our focus is our children.
The annual Spring and Garden Festival is this weekend at Fairchild Tropical Botanical Gardens, featuring the annual Spring Plant Sale, Butterfly Days, Fairchild Fruit Market, gardening demonstrations, and delicious edibles. Details at fairchildgarden.org.
And Welcome back to today's Topical Currents. We're talking about tax filing tips. April the 15th is this coming Tuesday. Bonnie Berman with you. We're visiting with Keith Hall. He's a certified public accountant and tax consultant. And we do have this question. If you're, two questions actually. If you know you're getting a refund, do you still have to file by April 15th?
You absolutely do have to file by April 15th.
Okay.
There are all kinds of rules and regulations. The IRS has have penalties that they can assess if they like to. One of those includes a late filing penalty. So there is a potential for a penalty, even if you're getting a refund, for not filing the return. Now, most likely that won't happen. But the best advice is, if you know you're getting a refund, then it is very easy to ask for more time to file that tax return. And that's simply by filling out a form 4868, which is application for an extension of time. Gives you 6 more months to file. So it's just one piece of paper, put it in the mail, and now you have 6 more months to get that return completed. Now, the tricky part there is it's an extension of time to file, not an extension of time to pay. So if you're in the other situation,
right,
where you think you might owe tax, then it's certainly worth some time to just sit down, you know, just for an hour on Saturday, do a quick estimate, maybe take out last year's return, just do a quick guess of how much you think you might owe, and then send that in with the extension. Because if you file an extension and then don't do the return for another couple of months and end up owing money, now you're going to pay some penalty and interest based on that underpayment that you should have paid.
What if,
so if you're getting a refund, easy to file the extension. If you're going to owe, file the extension, do a quick calculation, and send some money with the extension.
What if you're unable to pay? Can you use a credit card ever, or does the IRS do payment plans ever?
Both. You can certainly pay with a credit card. You can actually go onto the IRS website at irs.gov. On the main page over to the right are little icons to give you a number of different ways to actually make the payment. In addition to a credit card, they have an automatic installment payment option. You can fill out IRS Form 9465 and actually tell them, hey, I want to pay $400 a month or $200 a month or whatever fits within your budget until my total liability is paid. And if you owe less than $10,000, then the IRS will automatically accept your payment plan as long as it fits the parameters of paying that off within 3 to 5 years. So it's very easy to enter into that payment plan. Now, and one of the tricky parts there is you can really only have one payment plan outstanding at any one point in time. So if this year you're in that uncomfortable situation, maybe this is the year you had to move because you lost your job, you hopefully took that moving deduction we talked about, but maybe this is an uncomfortable year, so you're going to choose that 9465 installment payment option, but kind of make sure you know that next year you'll need to make sure you save enough to pay the taxes on time next year, because you can only have one of those outstanding at any point in time.
I see. Okay, let's take a couple of calls. We have Donna in Deerfield Beach. Hi, Donna. Welcome to Topical Currents.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Great show. The question I have is, I'm 63. My husband is 70. We are both retired at this time, and we're looking ahead 10 years, 15 years from now when we may take that next step and move into an independent living environment, and fortunately we have these things today to allow us to proceed. And if there are enough funds, what we're doing is taking portions of our IRAs or other savings and starting to invest in annuities. And we're looking for ones, depending on the payout structure, that when we annuitize, we can look at the amount and know we're going to be in sort of a pension situation. We were both independent, self-employed people. Consequently, we have no pension plans or anything like that. Of course, we have Social Security. So we're trying to build that income stream that tells us this is what we're going to be able to afford going forward. And my question to your guest is, what does that sound like from his perspective, and does he have any cautionary notes or advice he can give?
Okay. Thank you for calling, Donna. Keith?
You're welcome.
Donna, great situation, and congratulations on starting now. in planning for that eventuality. The number one thing you can do, and I would say this to all the listeners, the number one thing you can do in planning for your future is just that, plan for it. Think about it, talk to professionals, make sure you evaluate where you're going to go, make some decisions personally about what you expect to happen. And just the planning concept alone, being aware of what those options are, is the most important thing that you can do. So congratulations, Donna, for doing that. The thing I would caution you about is make sure that you recognize in most of those annuity contracts, there are provisions to make sure that the two expected life terms for each of you are combined together, so that as you buy those individual contracts, invest in those individual annuities, make sure you consider and visit with the professionals that you're talking with to say that if one of you has an accident or actually passes away, that some of those benefits will accrue to the other survivor, to make sure those last for the combined lives of both of you. That's kind of one of the things to make sure. Also recognize that just that long-term guaranteed cash flow has an underlying cost to it. There is that impact of the earnings that the insurance company or the investment house, whatever the underlying investments of that annuity are, have that management cost for the company that's providing those. They're going to want to make some money on that as well, which is certainly okay. But make sure you recognize that all of those investment vehicles have a cost to them as well. So it's a great idea to sit down and do some, some true soul searching of where you expect to end up, what your family history is, what your personal life expectancy is, because as uncomfortable it is to talk about, that is really the key here. Because most of us have that fear. We don't want to outlive our money. So making sure that you have a good estimate of where you expect to be, where you want to be, and then putting all that into the math model to make sure your annuity choices will meet those expectations that you have. Then, over time, and now obviously we can do another hour show just on this concept, but once you make that decision, don't put it in a drawer. Don't let that, okay, now we never have to talk about that again. Every 6 months, every year, every 2 years, in some recurring period of time, take those decisions out of that drawer and reevaluate where you are.
Okay.
What situations have changed? Don't just let that be a decision that you never go back on. Always reevaluate that as your personal situations change.
Great advice. Let me ask you, are there any free tax filing services available for those who can't afford professional help and can't file online?
There are a bunch of different ways. Now, the IRS, believe it or not, and and get the information straight from the horse's mouth, the IRS has an online free filing service. Those people who may not have an internet connection, there's lots of opportunities like a Charles Schwab, an investment vehicle. Many of those people will sit down with you and use their internet connection to use some of the free online software packages. Most of the big services like Tax Cut and TurboTax also have an online free filing service for certain tax returns. Those that just have a W-2 perhaps, or just have some Social Security income, that are the relatively more simple tax returns, can be done online for free. And this is one of the things I always talk about. Anytime I'm asked, the number one thing to keep in mind as you go into these type of tax seasons is to recognize that there are resources out there. Our organization, which is the NASC at NASC.org, the IRS at IRS.gov, with the internet connection these days, there are so many resources out there to answer questions, to provide things like a free option for online filing. It is so easy to kind of get lost in the minutia and think you're kind of out there all alone, but you're not. If you've got an internet connection, or you can find a place that has an internet connection, there are resources that you can call upon, so don't forget that.
Okay, and we don't have much time. We just have about a minute. Michael in Homestead wants to ask you a question. Hi, Michael. You're on Topical Currents.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'll make this quick and take my answer offline.
Okay.
Having to do with all these real estate foreclosures and the propensity of these, a great many people are faced with receiving 1099s from the banks, and I had heard that if somehow declare insolvency on some IRS form, you don't end up paying taxes on that. And the second part is the money you pay a lawyer to to defend your foreclosure deductible from your taxes, and I'll take my answer offline.
Okay, thanks so much, Michael. Keith?
Hey, Michael, thanks for the question, and I know we don't have much time. We've got another situation here that could be an entire hour show.
Okay.
But, Michael, you're basically right. For 2013, if you get one of those 1099-Cs, which is basically a forgiveness of debt, as a general rule, that's taxable income. If that foreclosure, that forgiveness of income, was related to your principal residence, the home that you lived in, then that income will not be taxable. If it is another home, if it's a real estate investment property or a second home, then if you meet that insolvency exception, which is what Michael mentioned, which basically means you have more liabilities than you have assets. So you have credit card debt, you've got the debt on this property that you have, you've got your own home mortgage, and all of those debts add up to be more than what your total assets are. That, by definition, means you're insolvent. If you can meet that definition, then you do not need to include that forgiveness of debt that is reported on that 1099-C as taxable income. So that's very important. And again, lots of detail involved in there. So, Michael, make sure you go out to IRS.gov or go out to NASC.org and ask us a question. If there's more detail you need to know about that, we can help you through that process as well.
Okay, thank you. Keith Hall is a certified public accountant and tax consultant. He's the president and CEO of the National Association for the Self-Employed. That is NASE.org. We'll have a link on our website, WLRN.org, also IRS.gov. Wish we had longer, but thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Okay, thank you. Food and Dining is next.
South Miami-Dade Cultural Arts Center presents the return engagement of acclaimed jazz and soul singer Renee Marie, who will be performing a tribute to the great Eartha Kitt, Saturday, April 12th at 7:30 p.m. and 9:30 p.m., and Sunday, April 13th at 3:30 p.m. More information at smdcac.org or 786-573-5300.
The silver tsunami of retirees living longer and staying active impacts everything from real estate to healthcare to politics. I'm Tom Hudson. Join us Monday morning at 9 for the Sunshine Economy. Aging gracefully, the retirement industry in South Florida, made possible by Kaufman Rawson.
April is Child Abuse Prevention Month, and Kids in Distress invite you to join them in their mission to prevent child abuse and treat children who have been abused and neglected. To learn about what they are doing for South Florida's most vulnerable families, visit kidinc.org.
Welcome back to today's Topical Currents. I'm Bonnie Berman. Joseph Cooper returns on Monday. We're going from tax time to food time. We're joined now by chef author and syndicated columnist Linda Gassenheimel.
Hello, Bonnie. Yeah, try it again.
Linda Gassenheimer. Sorry about that. We'll learn about cutting-edge restaurants, and it would be, of course, a South Beach establishment. So what's on the menu, Linda Gassenheimer?
Hi, Bonnie. Nice to be with
Thank
you.
Thank you.
Bonnie, answer this. Is it a restaurant? Is it a lounge? Or maybe it's a concert hall? Eating out today has a whole new face, if you've noticed. So what's new on the restaurant scene? Our guest here has some answers for us. He's Todd Erickson, and as you said, he's from the South Beach. He's the chef partner of Haven Restaurant Lounge on South Beach. Welcome, Todd Erickson.
Hi, Linda. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you with us, because he brought food.
Yes.
Always.
Thanks, Todd.
Yes.
I sure did.
So we'd love to hear from you, our listeners. What type of restaurant do you like? Give us a call. That's 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN. Bonnie, do we have email today?
Yes, radio at WLRN.org.
Okay, the phones are open now. Of course, also with us is our favorite wine guy, Fred Tasker. He's joining us by Skype, and he gives the wine suggestions for my Dinner in Minutes column that you can read in today's Miami Herald. You can also read Fred's wine column in today's Herald. Fred, what are we drinking today?
Well, I see that your dinner in minutes is a Passover dish, so I thought I would have some kosher wines to go with those Passover goodies.
Oh, great.
Oh, wonderful. That's terrific, as everybody might not know, or they might know, that Passover starts on Monday evening, April 14th. Bonnie, you and I are having trouble today. I don't know. It's Todd's food, I think.
Yes.
Todd Erickson, Haven Restaurant and Lounge. Now, you also call it a hi-fi lounge, serving fresh, organic, small plates and cocktails. Hi-fi lounge, what does that mean? Or sometimes you even call it a gastro lounge. So what's that all about?
Yeah, we've got a lot of different names for ourselves, but what we are proud of is that it's great service, incredible food, and really great environment. We go by hi-fi lounge.
Environment. So what do you mean by that?
Well, hi-fi lounge means high fidelity, like the reproduction of sound without a lot of distortion. Because we pride ourselves on our sound system. It's a beautiful, you know, we're a lounge where you can enjoy music as well as our 110-foot video screen that wraps around the perimeter of the restaurant.
110-foot?
Yeah, 110 feet.
It covers all the walls.
It covers all the walls. So when I'm in the restaurant prepping during the afternoon, the walls are just a flat gray. But when we turn on the projection, you can either be in the desert or a rainforest or on a roller coaster, or you can land a 747 around the room. There's a lot of options, and we design all of the content for our walls in-house. So we can get as creative as we want to be or as subdued as we want to be during dinner service. So like I was telling Linda earlier, that if you walk in at 6 o'clock in the evening, it's going to look entirely different than if you walk in at 1 in the morning.
I hope at 1 in the morning is not the roller coaster.
It depends on the vibe. It depends on what our VJ is thinking about. But
VJ, like, just a moment. He has a VJ and a DJ. So tell her what the VJ is.
He is responsible for programming the walls and making sure that everything looks great.
For video.
Video. So we've just started an event on Wednesday nights called Video Wednesdays, where the DJ, Tom LaRock, he plays great music, like hits from 90s today, all across the board, and then he has the coinciding videos to go with it. So while you're enjoying your cocktails and your small plates, you can be immersed in the music and the videos that are playing in 360 degree.
So
around
this
you
is the new face. People go out for restaurants not just to eat, but for
I
entertainment.
Guess so. This is like a whole.
And what I like about it is that he says that they can organize the sound so that it's not offensive, but it's the right vibe for the time, for the people who are there.
And it's not too loud.
Well, as the night progresses, it gets, it will get louder. Mm-hmm. But, like, again, the experience that you're going to have at 6, 7, 8 is completely different than right. You're going to have at 10, 11, 12. And that's something that we pride ourselves on really paying attention to, because we understand the guest at 6, 7, and 8 is going to want a different experience than 10, 11, 12. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay, so your lounge, your restaurant, excuse me, has lounge chairs. So if you sit at low lounge chairs instead of a table, or they have some high tops.
We have currently we have a chef's counter that seats four, so you can see us in the action. It's great to reserve. It's like sitting at a sushi bar.
Yeah. Right.
And then we have the bar seating, and we have an outdoor patio that's like a bamboo garden on Lincoln Road, so you can enjoy the people watching and enjoy your food at regular dining height. And then all of our tables currently are lounge tables where you sit in banquettes and like tuffets and eat. But that's changing.
But I was going to say, now you're changing it to regular dining tables. So are you going backwards?
We're not. We're going backwards and forwards and up and down, kind of. Because when you walk into the dining room at 6 p.m. now, all of the tables will be at dining height set for dinner. But as the night progresses, these tables are unique because they're on hydraulics. So at 10 and 11 o'clock at night, we can push them down and lock them. So then they go down to a regular lounging height. So it's kind of best of both worlds. People can have a nice dinner upright with the new expanded menu that, I brought a couple of teasers with me
right,
tonight.
We're going to get
today.
To that in a minute. So tell me something. Do you think this is the way restaurants are all going now, that it has to be entertainment as well? What do you see new on the restaurant scene?
Well, I think pretty much anything goes. There's been so much that's been
done. In Florida,
done.
That's for sure.
Yeah. It really.
South
and
Florida.
There's...
Yeah, go ahead.
There's... so many different dining styles, and I think there's something for everyone, and there's like a time and a place for each one of those dining environments. There's still white tablecloth, and I appreciate white tablecloth dining. I think it's something that's kind of disappeared, but I think that's also coming back.
So you think that's coming back? That's interesting because it's kind of disappeared. The casual, sort of elegant casual.
It has.
Has been taking over, but do you think white dining tables coming back?
I think it is there, and there's restaurants, you know, that still have it. I know that a lot of the formal hotel dining rooms got rid of it, but then you see glimpses of it in like MC Kitchen, Dina Marino's restaurant, and Cypress Room, Michael Schwartz's. Like when I walked into those dining rooms, I was like, oh, this is really nice. You know, it's a nice feel. Mm-hmm. You know, people want to get dressed up and people want to enjoy that experience, but then there's also, you know, like the Yardbirds and more rustic places that people want to go and have a really good meal and have it more of a communal experience. And there's that too. And I don't think there's a wrong or a right. I just think that there's, you know,
there's enough for different. Everyone.
There's right. enough for everyone. Everyone. Yeah.
So you mentioned you gave us the teas, brought us some foods.
I did bring you some
because
food.
Because it's really, really delicious. Bonnie and I have been gorging ourselves. Tell us what we're eating.
Well, I brought you a snack from the new menu, which is Cool Ranch Edamame.
So wait. This is edamame. Many people know. But what have you got on it? But when you say Cool Ranch.
It's a nod to that snack chip that everybody loves from their childhood. But I made a spice mix with dehydrated organic white cheddar powder.
Dehydrated organic white cheddar powder.
There's a mouthful. There's a lot going on in there. There's some Espelette chili from France in there. There's parsley powder, garlic powder, onion powder, white pepper. The list goes on and on, but all of those flavors together are reminiscent of, you know, that favorite snack chip, and dusted on the edamame, they become pretty addictive. You know, with that,
have to say, addictive they do.
I just think we should say what edamame is for those who may not be familiar with them.
They are soybean pods.
Okay,
they're soybeans in the pod like peanuts. So the coating is on the outside, so you get a heavily seasoned pod, but you don't eat the pod. You slide the pod between mm-hmm. your teeth. And pull the beans out. So as you're doing that, you're getting the seasoning from the outside of the pod, and then you're getting the tender edamame bean on the inside.
Well, so that's the snack. But you brought us a salad that you spent a half hour putting together for us. And it's
to
beautiful.
To make it beautiful.
And by the way, we're putting that up on the WLRN website, and I'll put it on my website, Dinner in Minutes, because it's so pretty. Tell us what it is.
This is a roasted spring beet and ricotta salad. That we make the ricotta in-house with a little bit of orange blossom water and champagne vinegar to separate the curds from whey. So it gives it a light floral flavor with the richness
Isn't
of the
that
cream.
Good?
It's really good.
Yeah. Then you get the roasted beets that we toss in a little vinaigrette.
And they're different colors. They're red and they're yellow. And they're little ones.
Yeah, with the tails attached.
It's very pretty.
For visual.
Yeah.
And then I made a savory Meyer lemon curd with this season's Meyer
lemon
lemons.
This lemon curd is better than a lemon pie.
It tastes like a lemon pie. It tastes like dessert.
And the whole thing is put together in such a pretty way. It's really, really good. Now, let's talk a little bit about the fact that you're going to be at Veritas Miami. Now, that's Veritas Miami is the United Way benefit. And tonight at Merrick Park in Coral Gables, it's going to be a fine wine tasting. Mm-hmm. There's going to be 350 wines to taste along with treats from many of Miami's top dining spots. And there are still tickets for that, so you can go to that and enjoy yourself. And it's a beautiful night tonight. But now tomorrow night, Friday, there's an interactive dinner. And Todd, you're going to be involved in that. So tell us about it.
I am. This was quite an honor to be invited. I love the idea of it. This is the 19th year that Veritas has been doing this specific dinner.
Called Veritas. Last year, Richard Fain from Royal Caribbean gave it that name.
Yes. I heard that they wanted to make it sound winey and
like a Meritage.
Like a Meritage. So they added the V, and that's what they got. They've got something specific to the event. This year, we're doing the interactive dinner with five chefs. And the five chefs are me, Jose Mendin, Cesar Zapata, Alberto Cabrera, and Giorgio Rapicavoli. Each one of us is responsible for one course, and I'm doing the first course.
So when you say it's interactive, that means we eat?
That's when it gets crazy.
Okay.
There are 750 tickets sold to this event, and they're at tables of 10. Each table of 10 has a chef at their table, but it's not a chef. It's a volunteer that's paid for a ticket to attend.
You have to cook for your dinner.
You have to
dinner.
Cook for
while
your
the
supper.
Chef the chef in front of the tables is showing how to make it, but each table makes their own.
So it's like each chef is a conductor of an orchestra of people that don't play music that often.
Yes. Right. So okay. You eat it at your own risk, I guess.
Yeah. Well, we've done a very good job, and the Hotel Intercontinental has done a very good job of organizing all of the mise en place and prep. So the sauces are pretty much made.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're made ahead. Well, I'm sorry to interrupt you. We have to take a break.
Okay.
I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we're talking with Haven Restaurant Lounge chef partner Todd Erickson. We'll take a short break, and we'll be back with more.
You can take a peek behind the garden gate. The Key West Garden Club hosts a tour of five beautiful gardens Saturday and Sunday, April 12th and 13th, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. All are easily biked or walked. Key West Garden Club docents will be at each garden with detailed plant lists and information. Tickets are available at all the gardens and West Martello Tower. Information at 305-294-3210 or keywestgardenclub.com. Brought to you by the Monroe County Tourist Development Council. Hazardous waste like oil-based paints, pool chemicals, and pesticides don't belong in the trash can. Help protect the environment by safely disposing of household chemicals at a home chemical collection center. Information at miamidade.gov/publicworks or dial 311 to learn more.
April is National Poetry Month, and O Miami Poetry Festival is attempting to deliver a poem to everyone in Miami-Dade County. Events include a literary pub crawl, Young Cuban Poet Showcase, open mic readings, free yoga, writing workshops, contests, and more. Details at omiami.org. Bill Cosford Cinema presents The Rocket, a winner of the Berlin Film Festival, about a boy's calamitous journey through Laos to find a home for his family and his entry into the dangerous rocket competition. Details at cosfordcinema.com.
We're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we've been talking with Haven Restaurant Lounge chef partner Todd Erickson. He's been telling us about what's new, what's cutting edge on the restaurant scene, and he's been feeding us very, very well. And he's also going to be participating tomorrow night at the Veritage Miami Interactive Dinner, and that's going to be really, really fun.
Very fun.
And it supports United Way, which is really important. But now it's Dinner in Minutes time. And so for today's Dinner in Minutes, as we mentioned earlier in the show, the Jewish holiday Passover starts Monday night. That's April 14th. So here's a spring dinner. It's perfect for Passover week or for any time, really. Fresh herb chicken with red potatoes and green beans. Now, chef, don't listen to this because we're going to use a food processor and we're going to use a microwave. And we're going to have this dinner in 15 minutes, okay? fresh tarragon, parsley and mushrooms are chopped in the food processor. And then I just sauteed some boneless chicken, boneless skinless chicken breasts, just a few minutes on each side. Remove them to a plate. In the same pan, you don't have to wash up another pan, I put the herbs, the chopped herbs, just for a few minutes to sauté and put that over the chicken. That's easy enough. And then I slice some red potatoes and I cut up some green beans and I place them in a microwave and I covered them and heat them for about 5 minutes. A little olive oil and salt and pepper. That's really simple. A complete dinner, and the photo is at dinnerinminutes.com. And for another Dinner in Minutes, try my Filipino chicken adobo. That's in today's Miami Herald. And please follow me on Twitter. That's at L. Gassenheimer. Fred, what are we drinking?
Well, Linda, the Jewish observance of Passover, as we were talking about earlier, starts Monday. So I thought we'd talk about kosher wines a little bit.
Okay.
Now, kosher in Hebrew simply means fit or proper. Nothing very mysterious about that. Some kosher wines are still made sweet, and a lot of traditionalists like to drink them at Passover, even if they don't drink them at other times. But
we're talking about the square bottle.
The square bottle that's not always even grapes. Yes,
right.
You'll always find your old uncle will insist on having one of those.
Okay.
But these days you can buy kosher wines that are really nice and delicate and dry and top quality and that sort of thing. And you can get pretty much anything you want. You can get Albarino, Cabernet Sauvignon, Chardonnay, Barbera, Gewurztraminer, you name it. You can get fine French Bordeaux wines that are kosher, and you can buy kosher wines from Israel from grapes grown on Mount Hermon, if that's important to you.
Hmm.
Now, kosher wines come in three levels, and they're certified by the rules are set by the Union of Orthodox Jewish Congregations of America. And regular kosher wines will have a symbol on the back label. There'll be a big O with a small U in the middle. And these wines are made under the supervision of rabbis and handled only by Sabbath observant Jews. They can't contain any animal byproducts. For example, some non-kosher wines are clarified by having a froth of egg whites dropped through them. And this is an animal product, so the wine wouldn't be kosher. So kosher wines are often clarified by having a bentonite, which is a finely ground clay, dropped through them to carry away the grape skins and that sort of thing.
Bonnie's kind of looking askance at the clay part, but the clay isn't okay. In the wine. It's okay,
no,
Bonnie.
I understand. Right. I understand.
Well, it falls through to the bottom, theoretically, but even with the eggs, you know, there are probably a couple of atoms left up in it, so you have to be careful of that. Bonnie, this, of course, means that all kosher wines are vegan, if that matters to you.
Of
while
course.
Non-kosher wines might not be, because they might have a little bit of egg white left. And you can identify the next level of kosherness is kosher for Passover. Now, this has to be done with stricter rules. They have to use yeast that doesn't come from bread, but from another source, like the grapes themselves often have yeast on them, or you get it from sugar and that sort of thing. And the back label for this is the same big O with a little U inside it, but then beside that there will be a little dash in the letter P for Passover. And the third level of kosher is what they call mevushal. It's spelled M-E-V-U-S-H-A-L. Now, this used to be made by boiling the wine, but that wasn't too favorable for its flavor. So now they flash pasteurize it they put it in a big series of tubes, and they take it up very quickly to 176 degrees, where the first tiny bubbles start to form, and then they cool it very quickly. And you'll see that word mevushal on the label. Now, the reason for mevushal wines is they can be served to observant Jews by non-Jewish servers, and this might come into play if you're having a Passover Seder in a hotel or a restaurant. And it is all kind of complicated, but it's important because a traditional Seder ceremony calls for four toasts to be made with wine. And, of course, you have to do it right.
Fred, I want to know where you get these kosher wines that you say they're so... Are they like at regular wine stores, Total Wine, that kind of thing?
Yeah, kosher wines are all over the place. You just go to a good wine shop and ask for kosher wines and just look at the back label. And you could even go through a supermarket and look at some back labels, see for the brands like Scali or Herzog, that kind of thing.
Okay.
Now, you won't have trouble finding them.
Yeah, they'll be out and about now, you know, for the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So I wouldn't be surprised you'd see special displays of them in boxes and things like that.
Okay, right.
All right, let's go back to Todd Erickson and he has a new restaurant. Haven is not on Lincoln Road in the main section of Lincoln Road. It's kind of west of Alton.
It is west of Alton. It's on Lincoln between Alton and West. So it's not on the pedestrian part. It's just catty corner from the movie theater area.
Right, so nice to stop in for a drink before the movies.
Absolutely,
huh?
Yeah.
Okay. But you have a restaurant called Wawa Taqueria that you've just opened. It's near Haven.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to spell that. That's H-U-A-H-U-A. Wawa. Tell us about that name, because I think it's funny,
well,
actually.
most people want to call it Hua Hua when they first see it, but it's easy to remember when we tell people that we just took the chi off of Chihuahua. And we have a little blue Chihuahua as our mascot, and the little blue Chihuahua exists in real life.
Oh,
you have a blue Chihuahua?
I do not, but my business partner Mike Bowles does, and her name is Jalapena.
Is that food? Is that food coloring?
No. She's gray. Like, but
they call
the breed a blue Chihuahua. Yeah. So
it's a Chihuahua Taqueria.
Yeah, and she's been Mike's for 9 years now, so she came well before the Taqueria. But that's kind of how the whole branding came around, because the dog is just so darn cute.
Okay, so but there's a lot of taquerias opening up, and so mm-hmm. tacos are becoming. But you say you have a gourmet taco. So what's a gourmet taco?
Well, we were kind of given that term. We just wanted to open a fast casual restaurant that was based on ingredients and really high quality ingredients and freshness. I wouldn't serve anything that was otherwise. So you kind of get that chef stamp of approval when you eat at Wawa's with, you know, really good ingredients. And we also just got the snail of approval stamp of approval from Slow Foods, and we'll be awarded that coming month.
Snail of approval?
From Slow Foods.
Slow Foods gives a snail of approval.
They do.
And what is the approval for?
It is for using local and organic when you can, and non-processed foods. So, you know, we make everything in-house. We really take the time to use whole foods and good ingredients in our cooking. And there's this group formed because they see merit in that and think that that's the way that everybody should be eating. So it's a nice honor to have, and we actually have the snail of approval for both restaurants now. We received the snail last year for Haven.
I'm glad. And you've got a chihuahua as well. So
yeah, snails and chihuahuas.
Blue chihuahuas.
Blue ones. All right, that sounds great. Well, as we mentioned before, Veritage Miami, the United Way benefit. Tonight at Merrick Park in Coral Gables, there's a fine wine tasting. There'll be 350 wines to taste along with treats from some of Miami's top restaurants. And then tomorrow night is the interactive dinner that Todd is going to. Yours is the first course.
First course.
But you won't tell me what you're making?
Nope. It's a big top secret. They've sworn me to secrecy. Yeah. It's going to be delicious. It's going to be a nice spring dish.
Okay. Well, on that note, it's been a really tasty week. Chef Todd Erickson, thank you so much for joining us.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Todd.
For the great food. Good luck at Veritage Interactive Dinner. Fred Tasker, great advice as always.
Always a pleasure.
Bonnie, great to be with you.
Thank you. Same to you. Yes, very good today.
Well,
thank
today.
You, Todd. Thank you, Fred.
Next week, we'll be discussing organic versus sustainable farming. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Join me then.
And thanks for joining us for Topical Currents today. Our producer is Richard Ives, with technical direction from Lorenzo Ponce de Leon. We have free audio archives and downloads at our website, WLRN.org, and more information, links, and discussion at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Tomorrow at 1, it's Ed Bell and the South Florida Arts Beat. You can enjoy another live performance from our Miami studios featuring award-winning jazz pianist Ariel Pocock. She'll perform works from her debut CD. And we return Monday with former NBC war correspondent Brad Willis. He is now known as Bava Ram. He chronicles how yoga saved his life after many misfortunes. Our music composed and performed by Mike Levine. And you can get more information on dinnerandminutes.com. I'm Bonnie Berman, wishing you a very good Thursday and a weekend. Please stay tuned for Here and Now from NPR, coming up next on WLRN. Thanks for joining us.
You've reached a certain age.